Welcome. I'm Rose Aguilar, and this is Your Call's special San Francisco election series. Every Wednesday through the day after the election on June 5th, we will air a special Your Call focusing on the very important mayoral race, propositions, and regional measures. Early voting has started at San Francisco City Hall Monday through Friday from 8 a.m. to 5 p.m. Weekend voting starts on June 2nd. The last day to register to vote is May 21st. You can register online, through mail, or in person at City Hall. This is a very important race. The next mayor of San Francisco could serve for 10 years and determine how we tackle the housing crisis, inequality, climate change, and so much more. On today's show, we are following the money. What role are super PACs or independent expenditures playing, and who is funding them? We will also talk about propositions, including Prop A, which if passed would make San Francisco the first city in the country to ban flavored tobacco products from all store shelves. Today we're joined by three guests. Larry Bush is co-founder of Friends of Ethics, a volunteer group working with the city and county of the San Francisco Ethics Commission to improve its performance. Larry proposed the creation of the Ethics Commission and a number of laws, including caps on campaign spending. He was a senior advisor to Mayor Art Agnos from 1988 to 92, and he closely follows the money. And he joins us on the phone from San Francisco. Hi, Larry. Welcome to the show.
Hi. Thank you very much.
Great to have you. Tim Redmond is founder of 48 Hills, an online publication that offers breaking news analysis and investigative reporting about San Francisco. Prior to 48 Hills, Tim was the San Francisco Bay Guardian's editor and publisher, and he's been a reporter here in San Francisco for 30 years. Hi, Tim. Thanks for coming back.
Hi. Happy to be here.
Great to have you. Joe Eskenazi is editor-at-large for San Francisco Magazine and a columnist for SF Weekly and Mission Local. He's been profiling mayoral candidates for San Francisco Public Press. Hi, Joe. Thank you for coming back.
Thanks for having me. And I'm also, I've been leaned upon to say, if you want to get text messages from me every day,
that's right,
about the election, sign up to projecttext.com.
I just signed up yesterday.
Thank you. I'll do my, then you got the text about how I'd be on this show.
Oh, I did not, but I'll look for it. My phone's off right now, but thank you. All right, let's dive in and talk about money. Larry Bush, you on your Facebook page have been writing about money in this mayoral race on a daily basis, and every single citizen has access to this database. First off, tell us, how can we find this?
If you go to sfethics.org, that's the webpage for the city of county of ethics in San Francisco, and then go under disclosures at the top and scroll down to campaign finance, and then you open it up there and you have several options. You can look at actual file forms by each committee and each contribution, or you can look at a data set. It's something that didn't exist 20 years ago electronically, but now it does.
All right. You've been following this very, very closely. Let's talk about how much money is being funneled specifically into the mayoral race. How much money are we talking about at this point?
Well, if you're talking about outside money, you're probably talking in the neighborhood of $2 million so far. The largest amount has been going either in support of London Reed or in opposition to one of her candidates, and that alone comes to $685,000 most recently. Every day there are new filings that come in. For example, today we have filings that show that the firefighters have added $80,000 to their campaign on behalf of London Breed, the Rose Pack Club, which is supporting Jane Kim, has put in $50,000. So every day you'll see an increase in the money.
Well, let's talk about the top dollars. The firefighters are endorsing London Breed. They're not endorsing any other candidates, right?
That's correct. Yeah.
All right. So where is this money coming from, Larry? The $685,000?
Well, only about 80,000 of it is actually coming from the firefighters. The rest of it is coming from Fat Cats, who give to a committee that has the name of the firefighters in it, but it's not actually the firefighters' pack. It's a special pack set up for this campaign. A lot of it comes from a group called Progress San Francisco. And they are sort of a dark money committee. They're dark money in that they don't have to say who gave to them, and then they in turn gave to the firefighters PAC until May 24th, when they will then have to file a report. And at that point, every day that they have a $1,000 contribution, they'll have to report it. But it means that we're in the dark about where a lot of that money came from. And the last time I checked, the Progress San Francisco group had put in about $400,000 through several different committees.
Tim?
What's interesting about them is that they were encouraged, donors to them were encouraged by Ron Conway, the billionaire who wants to have a major say in San Francisco policies. And he sent out an email to an unknown group of people urging them to give through Progress San Francisco.
Tim, you got a copy of that
email,
right?
Larry, I'm really glad you brought that up, because we don't know who gives them money yet, because they are set up, and this is why this money thing is so screwy. They are set up as a state political action committee, and the state rules are different than the local rules. So, and in fact, in his email, Ron Conway said, he made it clear in the email that you can give money to Progress San Francisco and it will not be disclosed until late May. Mm-hmm. Right? So this is a way for people who want to have an influence on this election to give money to a Sacramento-based group called Progress San Francisco, and then that money can be funneled in unlimited chunks. This is, by the way, these are independent expenditure committees. There's no $500 campaign contribution limit. They can be sent unlimited amounts of money, encouraged by Ron Conway to his close circle of big money friends, to go into Progress San Francisco. And then that goes to the Firefighters Committee, which isn't the firefighters, as you said, to support London Breed. So this is basically a way to funnel money that we can't trace into supporting London Breed.
The email that was leaked to you, the subject line is, new poll shows tight London Breed, Jane Kim, SF mayoral race, support Progress SF and housing for all ballot measure today.
Yep.
Why is it that we can't learn more about this money until late May?
Because San Francisco, thanks to people like Larry Bush, has tightened up its ethics laws and has required more frequent and earlier disclosures of campaign contributions for anyone who was running for local office or has set up a local PAC or a local committee. But the state hasn't done that. The state laws are different, and the state laws require disclosure less often and later. So because we have better laws in San Francisco, we know everybody who's given $500 to any of the candidates in the way that it's supposed to happen. And we know what the firefighters are spending their money on. But there's this loophole that they're able to go through state organizations to hide the money.
Joe,
Tim is right. I just wanted to interject.
Sure.
Loopholes are sometimes unintentional, but sometimes they're intentional. And so in some of these cases when we are not seeing where the money's going, I think that it's often very much intentional. There has been a migration of money over the past 20 years. 20 years ago, it was groups like the Chamber of Commerce that people talked about following the money from. We all remember from the Watergate that follow the money was the mantra. But then it went from Chamber of Commerce to a group called Committee on Jobs, which was a slightly different downtown group but had a lot of money. And now it's gone to groups like Ron Conway. What's significant there is that Ron Conway can fund these on his own. He doesn't even have to operate through anybody else. His wife, Gail Conway, has herself written a $200,000 check to a committee to go after Jane Kim, who is the leading opponent to London Breed.
And is that what is funding these pamphlets I'm getting in the mail, San Francisco women deserve better than politicians who defend domestic abusers? I've already received about four of these.
That's what's going on. You can see the fine print on the bottom there. It's a coalition to defend, etc. And you can see that that was incorporated specifically with the $200,000 from Gail Conway to resurrect the ghost of Ross Mercurimi once again and weaponize him against progressive candidates.
Joe, you wrote a story for Mission Local about some of the funders. You point out that Evan Williams, the former CEO of Twitter and Medium, dropped $50,000 on the firefighters in support of London Breed. You also write about realtors kicking in the city's Association of Realtors kicking in $20,000. The chief product officer of Facebook and his wife kicked in $18,000. Can you name others?
Well, Evan Williams has been very active. He gave $50,000 to the firefighters. He gave $50,000 to the It's Our Time pack. And he also gave $50,000 to, what was the third one he gave it to? He gave $150,000. Yeah. So he's been very active. If you go through the firefighters or Progress San Francisco, you find a large smattering of tech people who, you know, notably have not given a lot of money in the past. And, you know, it's not a cold, hard, smoking gun. But, you know, when Ron Conway sends out a letter to unknown individuals and then people who have lots of money and haven't got political inclination start giving large amounts of money, you know, it becomes interesting. And for that matter, Jane Kim has gotten $150,000 from just two donors, the fellow from Zendesk and the fellow from Automatic, which is, of course, spelled with two T's because that's how it's done, right? So there's lots of tech money going around. And, I mean, that's where the money is.
Have you been able to interview Evan Williams, the former CEO of Twitter, to say, well, what do you want in return for a $150,000 contribution?
I've not had the opportunity.
No, neither have I, and I'm sure, but in the past, what people tend to say is, oh, I just want good government, and I think this person will be a good mayor of San Francisco. The reality is, and I can't remember who said this, but I'm quoting somebody, this isn't my idea, is that these are investments. These aren't contributions, these are investments, because people who have a lot of money in the tech industry in San Francisco have an agenda, and that agenda generally revolves around not regulating tech. Right? And it also evolves somewhat around taxes and how we tax tech companies. So they have an agenda, and it is an agenda that is driven by money, and it's about money. It's about, you know, whether these companies are allowed to operate in San Francisco in a way that's good for them and their employees, but maybe not good for other people in the city. Mm-hmm. So that's really what it's about. Let me
emphasize what's being said here. Verizon gave $25,000 today to the firefighters PAC. And you say, okay, well, what's going on with Verizon? Then you switch over on the ethics page to the lobbyist disclosures, and you see that Verizon is doing a $10,000 a month retainer for lobbyists. And what is it that they're lobbying on? It's to reduce the regulation on cell phones. It's a small world.
Hmm. Well, can we just talk a minute about Ron Conway? How much influence does Ron Conway actually have in this city? I mean, the Chronicle and other outlets have reported on him being at meetings about taxes, for example, and wielding a lot of power. What would you all say about the power of Ron Conway?
I think you have to be careful not to make Ron Conway into a mythical figure, but at the same time not to make him into an allegory. He's a real person, and he wields real influence. I've reported on it and others that Ron Conway, with Mayor Lee by his side, and Mayor Lee's top advisors called in Mayor Lee's donors in 2015 to a meeting at a law firm, and they were threatened in no uncertain terms that if you give money to Aaron Peskin instead of Julie Christensen, you're going to have a hard time doing business in this town. And so that's a big deal when the mayor is there, the mayor's top advisors are there. And then after the mayor left the room, it was postulated that in order to keep his name out of the donations, that he could backfill other donors and donate to their pet causes instead. So these are real things. When somebody sends around a letter, soliciting funds, how can I say this? This is an email. Willie Brown put it very well, that the E in email stands for evidence. There's not an attempt being made to hide this. This is out in the open. This is a back room in the front room. And the question has to come back, do voters, do San Franciscans care? Mm. These expenditures are real. When people try and downplay them, that's on them. I don't care about this. I just care about issue A or issue B or issue C. I think that there's room to care about all of these things. I think that it's wrong to say that a politician is wholly beholden to his or her donors, but you can't then write that off. Acknowledging a conflict of interest is not the same as ameliorating a conflict of interest. These are very valid things. Ron Conway is very real. He's not the big bad wolf. He's not the headless horseman. He's a rich guy who spends lots of money and has lots of opinions and has lots of ears.
One thing about following the money is you have to see all the different streams of money that come in. Take Ron Conway, for example. He helped Ed Lee set up a committee his very first year in office, the Ed Lee for San Francisco Committee, and wrote the first check for $20,000. Within 2 weeks, Ed Lee had endorsed a rewrite of the city's tax laws that favored Ron Conway's companies, and then got it passed. Ron Conway put together a group of other tech people and created a a political action committee and a lobby group called SF City, and they helped get it passed. Meanwhile, Ron Conway wrote a check for at least $10,000 for Ed Lee to take a three-day trip to Paris. Then Ed Lee asked him for some money for the America's Cup, which was running into a deficit, and Ron Conway wrote a check for $1 million for that. So you have to follow a whole stream of money that goes not just what you see on a campaign fund, but through other areas as well.
Larry Bush is founder of Friends of Ethics, a volunteer group working with the City and County of San Francisco Ethics Commission to improve its performance. Larry is closely following the money around the mayor's race. Tim Redmond is founder of 48 Hills, an online publication offering breaking news and analysis about San Francisco. Joe Eskenazi is profiling the mayoral candidates for SF Public Press. And if you'd like to get texts from Joe about the latest in the race, you can go online to projecttext.com. And on this issue of money in politics, Joe's title is Voters Can Track Millions Flowing into Local Races. Do they give a damn? Do you care about money in politics? What questions do you have specifically about where the money is coming from, where it's flowing, and what these donors want back, want in return for their contributions? The toll-free number is 866-798-8255. You can also email your call at kalw.org. Head over to KALW's Facebook page, click on the video, and leave a comment there. Tim, what would you add about the influence of Ron Conway?
Well, he has said publicly, when he started getting heavily involved in San Francisco politics, he said publicly, we are going to take the city back from the progressives. We, meaning the more moderate to conservative people. And, you know, when you look at the divide at City Hall, it tends to be between people who support taxes and regulations versus people who support less taxes and regulations. And that's, you know, we can talk about Prop C and D later and the role of taxes in this. But that tends to be the real divide at City Hall. And Ron Conway has made it very clear which side of that he's on. I mean, Ron Conway was an early investor in Airbnb. And he stands to make a whole lot of money, way more than he has spent in San Francisco politics when Airbnb goes public. Right? Airbnb's valuation will, in fact, be influenced by what happens at San Francisco City Hall. Because if San Francisco had early on cracked down on Airbnb in San Francisco and encouraged other cities to do that, to stop this company from essentially wholesale violating San Francisco laws against short-term rentals, which is what it was. Every Airbnb unit in the early days was illegal. Right? So
expressly illegal.
Expressly illegal. Specifically illegal. And every single person who hosted one was breaking the law. And Airbnb was making money off breaking the law. And when Airbnb's lobbyists worked with David Chu to write legislation that gently regulated Airbnb but had essentially no teeth to it, that was something that was really important to Ron Conway and really important to these other tech investors. That's why they will make far more money off of that, off of their investments in companies in San Francisco than they are spending on San Francisco politics. So that's what it is. It's an investment to these folks.
That's right.
The only people who are really spending eye-opening amounts of money are the tobacco people right now, and for that matter, Mike Bloomberg fighting them. It really kind of makes you think, as a political reporter, as a citizen of the city, the folks who are giving money to potentially, as Tim said, make a windfall, they're buying in cheap.
Hmm.
It's tens of thousands of dollars to stand to make tremendous amounts of money based upon the investments. You know, maybe some of these people really are altruistic. Maybe some of them, like Don Fisher, who many San Franciscans disagreed with, really did love the city and you know, certainly wanted to sell bland clothing, but certainly had a place in their heart for the city. But, you know, this does seem to be very transactional.
Hmm. Larry Bush, did you want to jump in there?
Well, I think in terms of the largest amount of money in this election, that's going to be the tobacco companies, which now hover around $12 million. Almost
wow.
All
for one ballot measure out of nine.
Amazing. Yep. And this is Prop A, which if passed would make San Francisco...
Prop E is in Edward, yeah.
Thank you. Would make San Francisco the first city in the nation to ban flavored tobacco products from all store shelves. I'm actually getting knocks on my door about Prop E.
Yep.
I mean, I'm flooded. I have all the flyers from the various props and mayors, but for Prop E, I'm getting people knocking on my door.
Yep. They're going to bring Joe Camel himself. They've got all the money in the world, right? You know, I'm the Marlboro man, you know. I mean,
this is a huge deal for the tobacco industry because, of course, we all know that the tobacco, and this is, again, I'm not the first one to say this, but the tobacco industry has a problem, which is that their product, if used as directed, kills you. So every year, a whole bunch of their customers die. So the only way they can keep they can survive is to keep hooking new ones. And that's why the city is banning these, trying to ban the flavored tobaccos, because it's, you know, 28-year-olds are not smoking or not vaping mango tobacco. This is aimed at kids. This is aimed at getting the next generation. And that's why it's so important to the tobacco companies and why the city is, you know, I mean, this is another discussion, but that's really what's going on here, is the tobacco industry knows if San Francisco can ban this, it's going to hurt their young customer base, and then other cities will follow suit. That's why this is worth unlimited money to them.
So for a little bit
and
of
that's why we saw the same kind of thing with Airbnb.
And well,
they
more so with soda.
Measure a few years ago.
More so with, well, yes, that's true. He's right. But soda also dumped in lots of money, and Mike Bloomberg dumped in tons of money as well. Yep. The Mike Bloomberg. Ooh.
For a little history, San Francisco supervisors last year unanimously approved a ban on these flavored tobacco products, but then the tobacco industry funded a referendum to put the issue before voters, which is Prop E.
That's what happened. Yeah.
Yeah.
And the R.J. Reynolds Tobacco Company is blanketing the city in radio, TV, direct mail ads urging a no vote on E. Again, $12 million.
So far.
So far.
Yeah, and then also, this is not a game. This is not like you score 25 points in the first quarter and 25 points in the second quarter and you're on pace to score 100. You put your money in at the end, or at least you put your money in when you think people are voting, which is moving forward because more people vote absentee now than on election day. But, you know, the fact that they put $12 million in so far, that number could get a lot bigger.
And it will. You know, they're, I mean, what I know, we all know how these campaigns work. They've got somebody doing probably daily tracking polls. Looking at, because they have unlimited money, looking at how people are feeling about Prop E, how they felt about it last week, how the polls show this week, how the polls show the week after, and they're tracking every single bit of messaging carefully to see what works. And if it looks like this is still close, they'll drop another $12 million in. Whatever they feel, it's almost like, and I know some of the consultants who've worked on some of these campaigns for, you know, the soda companies and the tobacco companies, and basically there is no budget. It's spend as much money as you need to kill this thing.
That's right.
All right. That is Prop E. You can find more information at yourcallradio.org. Larry, I'd like you to stay on for a couple more minutes. We're going to take a break in a few minutes. But just in terms of, again, the mayoral race. So you're saying that in terms of campaign cash, London Breed's campaign is getting the most money. If you look at Jane Kim, London Breed, and Mark Leno, is that right?
Well, I'm talking in terms of independent expenditure money. She's getting the most independent expenditure money. She's also getting the most contributions. So it's a double header. Her contributions through third parties, either for or against her opponents, is at $685,000. To her own committee, it's about $800,000. And then she has a chunk of money that comes from the city under our public financing rules.
All right. And is there anything else we need to know about who's giving to London Breed?
Much of it is the city's establishment, the people who have always been part of the committee structure since the days of Willie Brown. So it's realtors and developers and now the tech industry. They are the dominant forces in her contribution groups.
And you've got tech guys also giving to Jane Kim, and you've got unions.
We'll talk about Jane in just a minute, but I just want to make sure we get all this information out there. Is there anything else we need to know about who's giving to London Breed?
It's all there to be, or it's not all there, but much of it is there to be seen, as Larry said, on the SF Ethics page. You can track it day by day. That's not all of it. That's not the complete picture. As Tim pointed out, there's ways to obscure the sources, and people pass money from source A to B to C to D for just that reason. And as he said, there's the different regulations with Sacramento and San Francisco. And we haven't even gotten into the fact that, as Larry and I have talked about, that slate mailers, which are much of what Rose is holding in her right hand there, the things you get, are you report the expenditures to the elections department, not ethics. So it makes it harder to track, and you can really obscure the sourcing there. So on the one hand, it's never been easier for folks to track the money. On the other hand, it's still very hard, and it's meant to mislead.
Anything else?
Yeah. No, that's there's. We have tried so hard in the city to make it easy for people to figure out where the money's coming from. And I give, you know, Friends of Ethics and other activists a lot of credit for doing that. And yet, these folks still try to find ways around it and try to find ways to hide it. Because they know if people knew that, that this industry, that industry is supporting this candidate, it does have an impact. Mm-hmm. And so, of course, they're trying to hide it. And they're trying. So it takes a little bit of work, but that's also what Larry and Joe and I are doing with our lives these days, is trying to do some of that for you and make it and help you out with that.
All right. So we talked about London Breed. After the break, we'll talk about Jane Kim and Mark Leno and where they're getting their money. Today, we're joined by Larry Bush, founder of Friends of Ethics. Tim Redmond is founder of 48 Hills. And Joe Eskenazi is profiling mayoral candidates for SF Public Press. This is a special edition of Your Call, a special San Francisco election series. And we'll be back after this. This is Your Call's special San Francisco election series. I'm Rose Aguilar. Every Wednesday through after the day after the June 5th election, we will air a special Your Call focusing on the mayoral race, propositions. We'll be following the money. You can vote now at San Francisco City Hall, Monday through Friday from 8 a.m. to 5 p.m. Weekend voting starts on June 2nd. The last day to register to vote is May 21st. We should also say that this is a ranked choice voting election. It's very important. If your top choice for mayor does not get 50%, your second choice might win. So it's very important to vote for at least two candidates. Today we're joined by Larry Bush, founder of Friends of Ethics. Tim Redmond is founder of 48 Hills. Joe Eskenazi is profiling the candidates for SF Public Press. And you can get text updates from Joe by heading over to projecttext.com. If you have any questions or comments about who's funding the candidates, where the money's coming from, what do they want in return, you can give us a call at 866-798-8255. You can also email yourcall@kalw.org or head over to KALW's Facebook page, click on the video, and then you can join the conversation. All right, let's talk about where Jane Kim's money is coming from. Larry Bush, what are you finding? How much has Jane Kim, or how much is being spent to elect Jane Kim so far? Do we have Larry?
And money that was directly to her, just double check that number. I was going to tell you, first of all, where is it coming from? For Jane Kim, it's coming from throughout the state of California. About 28% is from outside of San Francisco and 72% from within San Francisco. That's a pretty good 99% of it is from individuals, and 83% is from different parts of California. So her money is coming from what I would call affinity groups, people who are drawn to her because of her politics or her ethnicity.
99% individuals.
Yes.
How many individual? What percentage of individuals are giving to London Breed?
I can tell you that in just a second.
All right. While you look that up, Joe, what strikes you about the money going to Jane Kim's campaign?
Well, a lot of it's coming from the Service Employees International Union, which is the biggest union in San Francisco, public union, more than half of the public employees in San Francisco. So when she got their number one, that's a big deal. And London Breed got their number two. But they only spend money on their number one. And so far, it's about $200,000. She's also gotten a lot of money here from the Rose Pack Democratic Club, and I don't know if it's ha-ha funny, but it's definitely funny that the deceased Rose Pack and the deceased Ed Lee are now their names adorn Democratic clubs that serve as conduits for money to prop up battling candidates. The Ed Lee Democratic Club, a lot of tech money goes in to support London Breed. The Rose Pack Democratic Club, $150,000 I can just find right off the top of my head here to support Jane Kim. So that's remarkable. Let's just leave it at that. We've got a tenants group that's given $21,000 to Jane Kim here. We've got the pack of the Jane of the Rose Pack Club, and also more tenants groups with $9,000. And also, let's not overlook that $200,000 against Jane Kim, almost all coming from Gail Conway and the domestic violence group there. So that's interesting as well.
One of the things that I've noted so far, and again, this is going to change, is that the supporters of London Breed have been doing more negative campaigning. Mm. There's been more attacks on Jane Kim, attacks on Mark Leno, than so far Leno and Kim supporters and their, you know, the PACs, the individual, the Independent Expenditure Committees, are not yet attacking London Breed.
Well, yes and no. I think that Mark's campaign proper has sent out the Ron Conway money machine ad.
Yes.
And that's a big deal for them. And they took a lot of grief for coming off as a broken record with the money. But I think that the purpose of this was to kind of prime the electorate to respond to this. And now we'll see if they do. You know, when Ed Lee was elected mayor multiple times, it was kind of just taken for granted that, like, large amounts of outside cash from folks with bets to pay off here in the city were going to drop in money, and they did. And in fact, when he was first elected in 2011, you know, a lot of the other candidates had their PACs as well, so it was no big deal. Now, if it's an issue, the subject has been raised, and you can just, rather than relying on Tim or me or the Chronicle or anyone to report on it, they can just send a mailer out. Mm. That's the plan.
Yeah, although go ahead.
Rose, you asked a question about the percentage of individual contributions that were for the other candidates. London Breed percent of individual contributions is 84% compared to Jane Kim 99%. And for Mark Leno, it's 98%.
Okay. Do you have an average amount for those individual donations?
Well, if it's directly to the committee, it can't be more than $500.
Okay.
So what I think you're really looking at is the amount of money that's coming in from third-party expenditures.
Yep. And that's what I was talking about earlier. You know, the Leno campaign has done one kind of negative piece on London Breed, but typically what we see with this outside money, with this big outside money, is a lot of attack ads. Mm. That's typically because then, of course, the candidates can stand back and say, well, I didn't say anything negative about my opponent. I don't do negative campaigns, while their independent expenditure committees are out there trying to attack Jane Kim, attack Mark Leno, particularly, and we're going to see this change over the next few weeks, as they're also doing tracking polls. Right. They're also paying close attention to if London Breed, as most people project, is in the lead, if Jane Kim is getting close to her, we're going to see more attacks on Jane Kim. If Mark Leno is getting closer, we're going to see more attacks on Mark Leno. That's just kind of, and as I say, that a lot of that comes from these outside groups. All of the attacks on Jane Kim are not coming from London Breed's campaign proper.
Mm. Right. Tim is right, and you're tempted to say that their information lets them turn on a dime, but in this case it's let them turn on $1 million.
I would differ with Tim here. I think that there is a poor strategic move being undertaken right now. First of all, I think that negative campaigning is a real dodgy bet in ranked choice voting, because you need to get second place votes from people, and if you demonize a candidate, you're not likely to get a second place vote from their voters. Second, it doesn't make particular sense to me to knock down Jane Kim when I would say the most valid scenario for London Breed winning the mayor's race is to have Mark Leno finish third rather than second. And if you knock down Jane Kim, that makes that hard to do. So I think that there might be a disconnect here between the independent expenditure money and the campaign proper.
Let's take a look for a minute at how much the independent expenditure committee money is. For London Breed, she's received directly in direct support $506,000. She's also benefited from $180,000 so far spent to oppose Jane Kim. So that's how she comes up to that large of money. Now compare that to Mark Leno, who's received $77,000 in support. That's compared to $506,000. Or for Jane Kim, who's received $252,000 in support. That's, you know, that's chump change compared to the money that's going in to either elect London Breed or knock down one of her opponents. Mm.
Is there anything else we need to know about who's funding Jane Kim's campaign? Anything else stand out for you all?
Well, I mean, this is an ongoing thing, and you can check minute to minute. And, you know, I think that the date Larry had mentioned, May 24th, is interesting because then you can kind of pry back things and see who is behind the large checks that are then, you know, going from source A to source B to source C before they materialize in a firefighter knocking on your door.
What about Mark Leno? Who's funding his campaign? Larry, what stands out?
Well, he's getting a lot of support from the lesbian and gay and bisexual transgender community from across the country. They just have a small political action committee, and he actually asked them to not spend money on his behalf but have their donors make direct contributions, so it would be $500 or less. So he's not looking for big donors. And he only got $43,000 from them. Otherwise, he's got a network of donors that he's established from his years as a city supervisor, then in the state legislature, as an assemblyman, as a state senator.
I know the other candidates complain that Mark Leno was able, after leaving the state legislature, I believe in 2016, he's been able to just kind of sit back and raise money, you know, not at a leisurely pace, but, you know, this is what he does. He's, you know, he's 66 years old. He's made his money. And they've complained about that. And on the one hand, that's valid. On the other hand, that's the reward for being 66 years old and having, you know, worked all your life to do this. Mm-hmm. So certainly I can understand frustration with Mark Leno coming out against independent expenditures right now, because it plays into a narrative that suits him, and it plays into a system that suits him, because he is the one who's had the time to raise all this money.
Nevertheless, I mean, it is the case that of all the candidates – he's getting, or of all of the major three candidates, he's getting the least outside independent expenditure PAC money.
And that's the scenario that he has sought. Right. That the only yes. Mark Leno could take time off and do
let's
this.
Let's not forget that there's a back door for London Breed before she ever decided to run for mayor. Under San Francisco's laws, after she ran for the Democratic County Central Committee and had money left over and all debts paid, she could continue to operate that committee, even though the election was over and she had no debts, and raise money for it, which she did, you know, in the tens of thousands of dollars, in which she paid for a consultant and others. So there are all kinds of ways in which money flows. One of the things that's going to happen is that we're not going to really see how much money people raise until January 31st, because we only get information about how much was raised and spent up until the day before the election. But we all know that on election day, there's what's walking around money, where you get people out to the polls. And after the election is over and you know who the winner is, and if the winner has debts from a loan that they gave themselves to their campaign, people rush in to contribute to their committee so that the committee can repay the candidate the loan. It's like a handover.
Hmm. What Larry's saying is very true and has happened for a long time. Once the matter is settled, you well see people who donated to an opponent come in and make a donation to retire a debt, and it's very obvious what's happening here. It's trying to get back in the good graces of someone you fought to beat.
Hmm. Well, Larry, I want to thank you so much for joining us. Keep following the money on Facebook. If anyone wants to follow this, just friend Larry Bush on Facebook, because he posts updates on a regular basis. Larry,
thank
you for your work. Thanks for joining us. Larry Bush is founder of Friends of Ethics. He follows the money very closely, and there's a lot of money changing hands, and as he said, a lot more will be changing hands in the coming weeks. Today, we're joined on Your Call's special San Francisco election series in studio by Tim Redmond, founder of 48 Hills, Joe Eskenazi. He writes for Mission Local. He's profiling the candidates for SF Public Press. And if you go over to projecttext.com, you can receive texts from Joe about the race. Again, you can vote now at City Hall. Voting is open Monday through Friday, 8 to 5 p.m. Weekend voting starts on June 2nd. The last day to register to vote is May 21st. We do have ranked choice voting. If your top choice for mayor in San Francisco does not get 50%, your second choice might win. It's very important to vote for at least two candidates. Let's talk about that for a minute. Last week, Mark Leno and Jane Kim made the announcement urging voters to list them as their first two picks on the June 5th ranked choice ballot. I was watching the Commonwealth Club debate a couple nights ago. Jane said her second is Mark. Mark said his second is Jane. London said her second is London. She's not choosing anyone as a second. How significant is this announcement, Tim?
Well, it's the way that one of them will win. If one of them wins, they'll win with the ranked choice voting. Because I think by most accounts, London will probably come in first. And if Jane or Mark is going to win, they're going to win by getting those second place votes. And in fact, what's going to happen, in my opinion, in looking at this race, is the second place votes of the third place candidate will choose our next mayor. Because Breed, Kim, and Leno will come in some order, right? And when all is said and done, the way ranked choice voting works, the votes of the lesser candidates will be reallocated, but it won't be that much. And ultimately, it's going to come down to if Kim is in third place, her second place votes will elect the next mayor. If Leno's in third place, his second place votes will elect the next mayor. If Breed is in third place, her second place votes will elect the next mayor. That's just how it's going to happen. So it's really important that people understand what London Breed said at the Commonwealth Club. I'm sure she was joking. You can't vote London Breed 1, 2, and 3.
Right.
It would in fact, disqualify those votes.
Well, so, it would disqualify the second and third place right. votes. But I haven't – it's an interesting play. I agree with Tim. At this point, I would be surprised if London doesn't come across the finish line first. But, you know, I am extremely dubious of reporting as fact polls that are put out by anyone who has a skin in the game, be it the firefighters or Equality California or anything like that. But one thing that does seem to be consistent is no one's cracking much more than 30 or 31%. Right. So there's a lot of permutations to get that additional 19 or 20% you need in order to win this race. So the second and third place votes, and I think of the lesser candidates, too, well play into it. You know, it will be a bonanza of facts afterwards to see who the second place votes are from Angela Alioto's votes, for example.
Right. Mm. And how many votes she gets.
Yeah. Right?
And where do the nobody knows where those second place votes are going to go. But again, there aren't enough votes out there. If nobody cracks 30%, if the three top candidates are within 5% of each other and no one's over 30, the only way – there won't be enough votes from the more minor candidates to put everyone to 50% plus one. Mm-hmm. There just aren't enough votes there. So no matter where they go, it will come down to the second place votes of the third place candidate will be the only way someone gets to 50% plus one. And picking up on Joe's point about the polls, we haven't seen any independent polls besides – the polls that are done typically have a margin of error of plus or minus 5%, which means if a candidate gets 25% in the polls, it means they actually have somewhere between 20 and 30. So when the candidates are only a few points behind, essentially all of the polls are showing a statistical dead heat is what they're showing.
Also, you start getting into real double bank shot territory when you're trying to figure out second and third place votes in such right. a poll, because let's say that you start with the question, are you a likely voter? And people say yes. Well, what are the odds of someone calling you up and you really don't intend to vote, but you don't want to come off as a cretin, and you say yes? Let's say that two-thirds of people really are likely voters, but one-third aren't. You're already dealing with a one-third probability that means nothing. So you start multiplying this by other questionable factors here, and by the time you get to second place votes, third place votes, you're dealing with very unreliable information. Mm. We're going to have to let the chips fall where they may. And another part from that, to pull it back here, me as a media guy, is that this coverage isn't really important. It doesn't matter who's winning. You know, this is the horse race polls that beguiled us and got us Donald Trump for president instead of covering, you know, what's really going on. It really doesn't matter who's winning. What matters is what people are doing, you know, what people say they'll do, what they've done, who's giving them money, et cetera.
Exactly.
Right. And in fact, just to pick up on that, all three major candidates, and also Angela Alioto, of course, these are folks who have long records in public office.
Yes.
So they can put out plans and they can make promises and they can say all kinds of things. But these are also, and this is what has frustrated me about the Chronicle's coverage, for example, is they're not looking at people's records. Mm-hmm. You can tell what London Breed is likely to do as mayor from what she did as a supervisor. You can tell what Mark Leno is likely to do from what he has done. And the same with Jane Kim. None of these people have just dropped out of nowhere. They all have a political history and a record that you can look at.
Right. And that's why you're writing those profiles. With ranked choice voting, again, it's very important to choose at least two candidates. London Breed has not endorsed a number two. Angela Alioto has not endorsed a number two.
No.
I think Angela actually did say that Mark is her second, but I don't know if that's her official. She told me that.
Okay.
I don't know if that's her official point of view.
Official.
I know that he undid her as one of his seconds or thirds because of the Sanctuary City policy.
He was her. She was his third.
Correct.
And now that's canceled.
He has unendorsed her.
Right.
And a lot of people unendorsed her because of this strange move.
Can you just briefly go over that? Because we had Angela on a couple weeks ago, and she announced that Sanctuary stance after we had her on.
So Angela has... I'm going to have to go back and do the research here, but Angela was involved in some of the early sanctuary policies in San Francisco in the 1980s during times of international crises in Latin America when it really was a sanctuary policy. She has said along the campaign trail that this was never meant to, quote-unquote, protect felons. I believe last week she announced that she was going to be signature gathering to alter San Francisco's sanctuary policy. And here you run into some strangeness because the policy that was given to the Ethics Commission and the paper that was circulated by the Examiner mentioned that people who were booked, you haven't been tried, you haven't been found guilty, people who were booked for a felony would be reported to Immigration and Customs Enforcement. That is problematic because this person is still an innocent person. And as Tim and I discussed before the show, you could be booked for grand theft, murder, et cetera, and then, oh, well, you know, he just spat on the sidewalk, et cetera. You know, so that person still has their life ruined. And still, you know, the purpose of sanctuary city policies is that this way people are not afraid to go to the police. So if someone is terrorizing the immigrant community, they can report, they can go to the police and not be worried about getting hauled off and deported because someone stole their car or broke their window. Mm-hmm. And the same goes if they witness something happening to you, if you're a self-interested person. So all of the immigrants' rights advocates I've talked to are very disappointed for two reasons. A, because of the policy itself that Angela is putting forward. But B, because this is not a, this is a political issue that she's making it into. And they're as upset about the politics as they are about the policy. Going on Tucker Carlson is not a particularly good move if you're a San Francisco candidate. Tucker Carlson polls about as well as chlamydia in this city. So I'm not really sure what the move is here.
All right. Well, thank you for that. We did have Angela Alioto on a couple weeks ago. We also had Jane Kim on recently. You can find those interviews at yourcallradio.org. Mark Leno is scheduled for next Wednesday, and London Breed is scheduled for two Wednesdays from now at 11 a.m. You know, we only have about 2 minutes left. What would you say? There's so many propositions right now. What do you think is not getting attention that voters need to know about? Tim, what would you say?
Prop H is not getting enough attention. This is the measure that would essentially override civilian oversight of the police department and allow the police union to equip, to order the city to equip every single police officer with a taser. Whatever you think about tasers, and there's a very controversial issue whether this is a good tool for police to have, whatever you think about it, this city went through a long process with the Civilian Police Commission working with the community to adopt a policy on limited use of tasers. That wasn't good enough for the POA. They want to give every single cop one, and they want to do it now. The police chief is against this, mm-hmm. right? Because this takes away his authority and the authority of a civilian police commission to decide on a weapon for the police. That's just not getting enough attention, I think, at all. And you know, and people are going to see it on the ballot and say, oh, do we want tasers for the cops? Well, maybe better to have a taser than to have a gun and shoot somebody.
That's Angela's argument.
Which is Angela's argument. The reality is they're not the same. You cannot legally use a taser where you should have legally used a gun. That's just you can't. It becomes a tool instead of de-escalation. So I don't think that's getting enough attention at all.
And that's Prop G.
That is Prop H.
H.
And let me add to what Tim's saying. It's very hard for me to predict that one losing. Most people are going to say, well, tasers make sense. It's better than shooting somebody. This will save lives, and they'll vote for it. But it's not a yes or no vote on tasers, because the police commission, after taking a decade and change, has agreed to have tasers. The difference is, should we have tasers given to officers with the policies that their own union has dictated, which has a very lenient use of force threshold, that you can go after someone who is, I believe, assaultive. Now, assaultive, by definition, is me tapping you on the shoulder or me saying, I'm going to get you. Mm. And that could result in lethal force, because tasers, you know, are not safe. They're not toys. So that, you know, the actual measure that they spent a long time working out, you know, is city policy, and this would override that.
All right, that is Proposition H. We will have both of you back on the day after the election to analyze the results. We might not know who the mayor is at that time.
We won't know.
We won't know. Okay. Well, thank you so much for all the information. Tim Redmond is founder of 48 Hills. Joe Eskenazi is profiling candidates for SF Public Press. Head over to projecttext.com to get texts from Joe. And again, early voting has begun at San Francisco City Hall. Be sure to register if you're not already by May 21st. Tim and Joe, thank you for coming in. Thanks for all the information.
Of course. Happy to be here.
Thank you. And thank you for joining us. I'm Rose Aguilar. It's your call. And I'm going to hand it over.